Hi guys, Dre Harrison here. Welcome to episode 316 of Motorsport 101. Normally we'd be a bit more jokey about our intro and whatnot, but sadly we wanted to take a quick moment at the top of the show to pay tribute to Councillor Robert Foote, who sadly passed away at a race meeting at Brands Hatch. He was a marshal at the track and was in an awful incident during that race weekend over there. And I think it goes without saying that marshals are the lifeblood of motorsport. They are the reason we are able to go racing. They're the reason we can record this show and talk about motorsport and watch it. And no one should ever have to make the ultimate sacrifice to enable us to do what we do here. Thank you, marshals. And of course, from everyone here at M101, our thoughts, prayers, and condolences with Robert's family, colleagues and loved ones. It's unfortunately just the horrible nature of motorsport, but at least on a slightly positive note, that the motorsport we did get to see this weekend, especially in Formula One this weekend, I think everybody will say pretty unanimously that that was a very fun Hungarian Grand Prix. And as RJ at the bottom gets his gear ready to go. Nice to see that he is completely unbiased in his opinion down at the bottom right there. RJ, how you doing down there, buddy?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah,
out of 10.
It's a rare race. It's a rare race that pulls that rating out of me. If you follow me on Twitter, I don't give those out very often, but that was for good reason. This was a special one, and if it's led to RJ breaking out his old Alonso cap, then you can probably guess that why it was pretty special.
It's not just the old Alonso cap; it's the Williams racing gear that I got on. I could not express ship Alpine gear over to my house because nobody thinks you're going to need Alpine Formula One gear to celebrate an Alpine Formula One victory in the year 2021.
No.
But it happened! Esteban Ocon won this damn race!
Woo! Just as a side note, King did in fact lose the blueberry pie bet, and him being pied live on the show is pending for future approval.
Coming soon, .. Maybe something for you Patreon backers exclusively? Who knows? Although, the footage would be far too great not to put on the internet, as far as I'm concerned. Coming soon, .. Question mark. Maybe. But, King, remind the viewers at home what you said regarding Alpine in this season.
Well, it was in relation to the bet I won last season where Renault wouldn't win a race, so I wouldn't have to down, a dozen bananas in one sitting. And I decided, hey, it's not going to happen again this year.
Watch a man die of potassium poisoning live on the internet.
Time to double down. And since they're no longer the yellow Renaults, but the blue Alpines, I'm like, what if it were blueberry pies?
It would never happen. Isn't that right, King?
Yeah.
would it help if I rubbed it in your face a little bit more if I said to you that Esteban Ocon was 250-1 to win that Grand Prix?
Oh my goodness.
At 2 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
Did anyone take that bet?
No, apparently. I did actually. I have some friends in the bookies I work for that are able to tell me these little sorts of things, but no one touched it. Can't imagine why, he could have gotten 250-1 odds on Esteban Ocon winning that Grand Prix. So if anyone else there outside of the bookies I happen to work for, the green Irish ones, if you need a hint, well done you, and also can I have your lottery numbers for next week? Just asking for a friend, personally. But speaking of which, we also got Cam Buckley here, including his new best friend. It's the imaginary one in the background where his head is. Now you see it, you can't unsee it.
Right up here, thanks to how I'm having to light my room with my coughing, wheezing, dying iPhone 7.
and its flashlight.
I've got the entire down
pat. RJ is, it is drip or drown, and bitch, RJ is raining.
RJ's gone for the full, as we Brits would say, full kit wanker.
Look, that certainly was a 2021 Hungarian Grand Prix. Had to say, I wasn't expecting much, but Valtteri Bottas showed tremendous skills as a pinball wizard.
Yeah.
In fact, didn't in tribute to the song, he drove into turn one using his sense of smell.
As opposed to any of the other senses you could maybe use to drive a racing car, no? No? Maybe? We'll get into that very briefly, but little did we know the carnage that would cause in the, shall we say, the butterfly effect of two cars going very, very deep into braking at turn one, and all the sequence of events that would follow that would lead to the 111th Grand Prix winner that we know in what we call Formula One today coming through. Because we've got a lot to get through on an all-time classic Hungarian Grand Prix, which in and of itself sounds like an oxymoron, but Hungary just has this knack of producing excellent races when
there's
it
no
really,
in between.
Really shouldn't. It's either
complete boredom or mayhem.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
There is no middle ground on anything like that with Hungary, and yet we got the completely batshit insane end of the scale on this one, and we'll break it all down over the next hour or so. But also check in with our friends at Red Bull's PR department and talk about the quite awful week they had to go through trying to get a bigger penalty for Lewis Hamilton. Spoiler alert, it wasn't successful. But in the meantime, we'll break down all of that in the next 5 minutes or so. But first of all, basically, you can find us. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Check us out on there. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. And if you want to follow our personal handles, you can. If you're watching on YouTube, they're on the screen right down below us. If you're not, they're at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. And if you like us even more, you can follow us on Instagram as well, at Motorsport101Pod. You can check that out if you haven't already, for little sneak peeks, news when episodes go live, and some other fun stuff too. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio episodes. You can upgrade to $10 for the video versions and the supporters club of our Discord server where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. So, without further ado, let's get into the 2021 Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yeah! Woo!
RJ's going to be feeling...
You can tell RJ isn't happy about this at all.
No. What gave it away?
No, really. Esteban Ocon won the 2021 Hungarian Grand Prix.
I'm so excited, y'all!
All it took was a ridiculous start, a red flag, a drying Hungaro ring, leaving Lewis Hamilton out stranded on intermediate tires to create one of the freakiest Grand Prix of recent times. Valtteri Bottas donned his pinball wizard shirt, as did Lance Stroll, and took out 5 of the top 6 runners in the championship, with either severe damage they would have to carry into the race, or taken out altogether. Those being Verstappen, Bottas himself, Norris, Leclerc, and Perez, who had his power unit can opened on the right side.
Oof.
With a wet Hungaroring drying out rapidly during the subsequent red flag, everyone but Hamilton changed their inters for slicks, while the former fell back due to having to pit after the race restart. Well, who does that leave at the front? Well, the two unlikely protagonists of Esteban Ocon and Aston Martin's Sebastian Vettel. Vettel threw the house at the Alpine, including an undercut attempt which was botched by his team, giving him a slow pit stop. But Ocon held on from Vettel, both of them hanging on from a rampant Hamilton, who was at times 3.7 seconds a lap quicker on fresh medium tires. to become F1's 111th different race winner. Sadly, for the Vettel supporters on the show, it was not to last. Hamilton was bumped up to second after the flag due to Vettel's car falling foul of the minimum liter of fuel required for a post-race sample.
Bonus.
Also bumped... Oh, it hurts. Thought I had another one in the bag. It also bumped Carlos Sainz up to his second podium of the year in third place. I'm going to start with RJ on this one because he is just raring to go. What was your favorite part of story of this epic race? RJ, the floor is yours.
You know, I'll tell you. We don't have a lot of working class Formula One drivers. We haven't. We probably never will again. The closest we're going to get are people like Lewis Hamilton and Esteban Ocon, who, by comparison to most Formula One drivers, did not grow up in the kind of wealth that, say, you know, a Lance Stroll would have grown up in. He's not a second generation, third generation Formula One talent. He had to work his ass off just to get scouted by junior teams in the ladder. Remember in 2014 when he was European Formula 3 champion? When he was a member of the Lotus Junior Academy, when Lotus were not well off.
No.
And that was the season where Max Verstappen made his single-seater debut, but at the end of the day, Esteban Ocon was champion. So Lotus's program folds, no problem, gets picked up by Mercedes, wins the GP3 Series title off of consistency alone. After a half year in DTM in 2016, he's up to Formula One in Manor, and then by 2017, he is up to the team that is now known as Aston Martin. 27 consecutive finishes to start a Formula One career. In the points, but all but two races in his debut year. 2018, he pretty much outperformed Sergio Perez in every statistic other than the points. Then he has to take a year off. Mercedes don't really know what to do with him until they send him off to Renault. And then there's this whole theory that Esteban's only there because, you know, it's a French driver and a French team. That looks good for the shareholders, but that's really the only reason why he's there. And all throughout 2020, that seemed to be the prevailing theory. After a year of race rust, he just couldn't measure up to Daniel Ricciardo for most of the year. Until Sakhir came around, he finished second in that race. And you start to think, this is the day that things start to turn around. 2021 comes in. He has that year of experience under his belt. He looks great to start the season off. Gets that long-term deal. Then he has a dip in his form. And then he changes his chassis. And he's off to a good start this weekend. But I don't think he ever would have imagined that he would have been
not
the one
a million years.
After everybody else gets wiped out in front of him that he's going to be able to drive on, take the lead of the race. And we know it's tough to pass at the Hungaroring. So if you have conditions that can produce a shock winner, it's going to be very hard to knock them off the top. And trust me, Sebastian Vettel tried his ass off for 70 laps. Esteban Ocon withstood the pressure of a four-time Formula One champion up front. And he didn't buckle.
Nice.
Fair play to Fernando Alonso. You know, I thought that this whole comeback tour, just for the money, just for one last run at it, I did not think we were going to see one of the all-time great defensive stands from Fernando Alonso to keep
Wiley old Fox
at bay.
Holding off a car that was over 3.5 seconds. It shows how hard it is to pass here that Alonso could hold off a car 3.5 seconds a lap quicker at that stage of the race.
I figure once Alonso had kept him back for that long, I'm thinking, Esteban's got this. Unless he makes a mistake up front, he has this win in the back. I'm so happy for this kid. I've always been a big believer in Esteban Ocon's talent since I first started getting into junior Formula racing and since I first watched him race in Formula One. And it feels good that belief in his talent is finally going to pay off in a victory. And I know that circumstances had to play out for that to happen, but that could really, really change the trajectory of his career. That could lead to some big things down the road. And think of what this means for Alpine. Yes, it took until year six of the five-year plan for everything to finally come good when you should have been winning races in about year two or three with all the bluster that he came in.
Mid-pack at best.
Right, but there are a lot of people at Enstone who about before Renault came in and bought into the team again, they were probably wondering on a race-to-race basis, you know, are we going to see out a season when Lotus is as troubled financially as they were in like the last couple of years of their existence?
Look,
that's their first
I'll
win since
in.
2013. That's a good moment. What a good moment for us. Come in, Cam. Tag in.
Well, I was going to touch on that last point. Not a big fan of this team under previous management. The thoughts are well known if you're a longtime listener of the show.
Yeah.
Get fucked, Cyril. But long ago, I supported this team when they wore the black and gold. They were my boys. I watched them climb from the midfield to fight for wins, to claim those wins, to be the only thing in this world that could seem to fluster Sebastian Vettel in the second half of 2013. Mm. And then I watched 2014 happen.
Oof.
And I realized I was watching my team in the sport in its death throes.
It just makes 2015 at Belgium all the more that more special.
Mm. That's,
in hindsight.
You know, it was the last gasp of what was once a championship team. And it's been a rough few years for Enstone.
Oh, yeah.
Going away, effectively dying as a team, being bought up by Renault for pennies at the end of 2015, and having a long, hard road back. A lot of those people in Enstone have been working there, not only through the Renault era, back through Lotus, back to the last Renault era.
Back to the Benetton and the Tolman days.
I can't imagine what was going through their heads as they watched Esteban take the flag. This has been a long time coming, and a lot of very hardworking people are a part of that success.
And I think,
and to that effect, Esteban Ocon, who, after a certain incident, cost Max Verstappen the 2018 Brazilian Grand Prix win, and I stand to this day that was still Max's fault, a lot of people soured on Esteban. Tossed him aside. He didn't deserve to be in the sport. How quickly they forgot. He gave Sergio Perez fits in that Force India.
Again, I made the point. The only thing he didn't outperform him on was on the total point sheet in 2018. It was much
He was phenomenal there.
They were
he was phenomenal. He was phenomenal in the manner when he was pushing super hyped prospect Pascal Wehrlein every weekend from weekend one.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been there, and I've always thought, give him the time, give him the tools, he will show you why he was that hyped to begin with.
There we go.
And he did.
Absolutely.
He was under pressure from a four-time world champion in a car that's a damn sight faster in a straight line, whatever that's worth around this track, and he did not buckle.
Freaking love it. Freaking love it.
I've never been so happy to have my man come so close to a win and not get it. Because, yeah, he's...
Yeah, that would have hurt a lot more if it was disqualified from a win. Oh, fucking Aston!
Oh, yeah, I mean...
Why?
It's kind of funny, and not to get too self-indulgent as the Sebastian Vettel fan of the podcast here, but... Given that they used to boo the shit out of this man not that long ago, and now, you know, unfortunately we saw the return of said booing for Lewis Hamilton this weekend in Hungary, which, you know, and I will say off the record, it wasn't appropriate then, and it's not appropriate now. Let me make that point absolutely clear right now. Like, this was meant to be the feel-good second place. The other feel-good second place. Because as a Vettel fan, I'm spoiled. We already had one of those in Baku. And we were this close to getting another one. And let's be real here. This was an important weekend. And Sebastian Vettel did a phenomenal job standing up for the LGBT plus community in Hungary and beyond. Given if you've been reading the news in recent months, Hungary's abhorrent homophobic and transphobic law changes in their country. You've probably seen it during the European Championships as well, given Hungary had a massive role to play in that tournament as well. Vettel did a stand-up job standing up for that community over this weekend. It probably stung even more of the casual audience this weekend that his second place was taken away due to a mix-up on the amount of usable fuel left in the car. Now, as a stand note, at time of recording, like Aston Martin are in the process of lodging an appeal. We may see that overturned. Probably won't. But, you know.
Yeah, it's going to take something. Apparently, the pump to take the fuel out of the car is broken. So it is currently impounded by the FIA, and they're going to try and get what they can out of it.
Maybe probably not going to change. Maybe that extra 7/10 of a liter fuel is there, but another point in this race.
No,
Sebastian Vettel, late career, the most wholesome individual TM outside of George Russell on the grid.
Though it does feel strange that the fuel pump in the car conveniently had a malfunction after crossing.
Apparently, it's not the fuel pump to feed the engines. Apparently, it's a pump that actually extracts it for the FIA.
Oh,
yeah. So
we'll have to see
what happens with that. But yeah, Sebastian Vettel, irrespective of the final result, I am incredibly proud to support that man because he has his head screwed on straight.
Yeah,
he's got his head screwed on straight.
You know, to Hungary, I will go back to, I'll paraphrase what Vettel said earlier this year during a call with a fan. Your kind is going extinct.
That's right. I don't like the kind of bullshit that Prime Minister Viktor Orban and his Fidesz party have been spreading throughout Hungary. I like that Sebastian Vettel put the community, the LGBT community of Hungary, front and center and tried to uplift them instead of lumping them all in with the other goons in Hungary just for a cheap dunk. Sebastian Vettel is a good man. He was dripped out in head to toe, rainbow helmet, rainbow shoes, got the rainbow mask, rainbow shirt, which may or may not have gotten him a reprimand. It kind of didn't, but, you know, it's not a good look when you're getting reprimanded for and you just so happen to be wearing a rainbow shirt.
Yeah, a side note for that, thankfully it wasn't just a reprimand for that shirt. It was a reprimand on procedure, and he was not the only one.
Yeah.
Still not a good look.
Still, no,
as another note, a fan invited Sebastian to see his marriage proposal to his girlfriend, and Seb went over the weekend. Showed up on a scooter.
I want Sebastian to show up to my wedding, but like, unfortunately, I'm horrendously down bad, so that will probably never happen.
You said it, not me.
I'm being honest, but it was wonderful. Can I also talk a little bit about Alonso v. Hamilton? How fucking awesome was that? Like,
inch perfect.
God, that was. You ever have one of those races where you think this is what the hybrid era kind of should have been all this time, and you just see, like, one guy in a faster car trying to attack another guy in a slower car, but there's just enough balance there where Fernando can put his car in the right spot and make Hamilton have to really work for it.
3.7 seconds pace differential, and Alonso held that line for as long as he could.
Yeah. Shades of Imola 2005, where he had to hold off a desperate Michael Schumacher on that day. And it was just perfect car placement. It was only a lock-up in the end from Alonso towards the end of the race that allowed Hamilton to open the door and come through. But I think I can easily say Ocon does not win that race without Alonso's key contribution in the latter stages.
Amazing
of that
to
race.
Think. Fernando Alonso, the guy we all paint as the serial sly, conniving politician that's only in it for himself, in his selflessness, buys his teammate more time to win a race.
What I loved as well at the end of the race, Esteban Ocon missed park for May, mm-hmm. and kept going, and then had to run back to the pit lane, and Fernando was there waiting for him to congratulate him, as was his whole team, because that team was down bad for any good result, and they got the best result they've seen since Australia 2013.
First and fourth on the day.
Unbelievable.
37 priceless points in that midfield.
And huge for their constructors' battle.
Massive haul. Massive, massive haul for the Alpine team. King, you got anything else from that race that's...
everything's covered.
I don't know. I think there's one thing. I think RJ's swimming in it right now.
Look. There's going to be a lot of stuff that we get into this race that we don't even touch on, like Mick Schumacher having a few good laps where it looks like he may be able to put his Haas ahead of a bunch of other cars. We're not even going to talk about Nikita Mazepin and Kimi Raikkonen's clumsy pit lane collision. We're probably not going to talk about Pierre Gasly getting the fastest lap. We're not going to talk too much about Carlos Sainz Jr. going from 15th to the podium in the final classification and then getting scolded by Buxton on the post-race show.
All-time great reaction image.
Oh,
all-time.
Oh, man. There's three things.
There's three big things that I want to talk about just to rapid-fire him. Max Verstappen scored 2 points with half a car. And when I say half a car, that is with no exaggeration. The whole barge board cluster on the right side of the car was destroyed in the turn one incident.
Took a big old bite out of it like a fucking double cheeseburger at Five Guys.
Yep. And given that he placed a car, Red Bull were a little bit off their usual pace. And then we learned that in qualifying, he had a cracked engine mount. So put a car P3 with a cracked structure. Championship's still on, despite the total fuckery. On the other side of the championship battle, Lewis Hamilton left out to rot on intermediate tires by his team, by his own decision, had to cut through the field. Hell
Hello,
of a recovery
Stefan
drive to
Brattle.
Third.
Hello, Jack Miller in Argentina 2018.
Oh, fun times.
Phenomenal image of Lewis alone on the grid. Had he pitted, there would have been no cars on the starting grid for the race. For the restart.
Did anybody ever get, like, MotoGP 2014 Saxon Ring vibes off of that, where everyone's in the pit lane?
It's Stefan Bradl at the Saxon Ring! It's Jack Miller in Argentina!
Oh, it's beautiful.
That's awesome. The final point, I will address RJ's shirt. Williams Racing... back in the points, not with one car, oh no.
Not
but
both
with
of them.
Both cars. And Ten only points. George Russell would be out here scoring points, only to be outscored by Nicholas Latifi on the day.
Let's go over this for a second. So the race restarts, and everybody comes out of the pits. George Russell comes out leading all the guys that started from the pit lane. Nicholas Latifi's third in that queue. Russell admittedly jumped a few guys in the queue, and he gave up some positions. We thought something was going wrong with his car, but thinking, Jesus, it's happening again. No, he's just giving back the positions as instructed by his team.
Yeah, he jumped the queue before he had permission from his team, and he did not have permission. So it looked good for a sector.
Nicholas Latifi, I'll tell you, he may still be the Mendoza line of Formula One, but that Mendoza line has moved up this season. He was damn near close to getting out of Q2 again. Fair play to him. He held his nerve in his position, and George, God, I know this is the understatement of the year, but this has been such a long time coming for him. To finally be able to score points in the Williams, because we know he's had the qualifying pace. God, at Styria, he was within arm's reach of points until the final few laps. And he doesn't make Q1 this... He doesn't get out of Q1 this time, you're thinking.
First
oh,
time all
geez.
Season. First time all season he didn't get out of Q1. Amazingly.
But, yeah, Williams. I know this
looking,
team is
looking their
lot.
Worst this year.
I
and they've scored points.
10!
That 10 whole points. Just to put that into perspective. Just to put that into perspective, that's more points than they've scored in the last three seasons combined. Yes, that does show you how far Williams had fallen within the last 4 or 5 years. But I think today shows that things are genuinely starting to look up again. Maybe this is a flash.
All it took was kicking. All it took was kicking the family out. Look, Nicholas Latifi. Nicholas Latifi ran third, legitimately ran third ahead of much faster cars for that whole first stint. Yeah. It, ironically, he's just as integral to the Esteban Ocon Vettel fight because he dragged the whole field back while those two ran off into the distance.
He backed the wagon
off. And terrifyingly, well, as a honorable mention, someone who I think could have potentially won this race had he not been stuck behind the Williams, Yuki Tsunoda looked good this weekend.
Yeah, I know.
Best weekend
know
for him in a hot minute.
Yeah, and I know people are going to talk about the fact that, you know, he didn't want to let Gasly by, then he spun late in the race, but even still just getting a 7th place result or a 6th place result, whatever it is in the final classifications, is it 6?
P5, P6, which is huge for that team. Middle of the table points with both cars. It's big for AlphaTauri as well.
That's huge for Yuki to have that momentum with that result, because Lord knows he needed that. He needed that after some of the shit that his boss was saying about him.
Yeah, to say culturally insensitive would be an understatement. I'd like to say on behalf of everybody else here, Yuki is far better than your typical Japanese.
And that's no slight on Naomi Owase, who took his first Formula 3 win this weekend. But
hey!
I'm happy that Williams is back. I'm happy that we don't have to talk about the George Russell curse. George cried. He cried his eyes out. And then we were thinking he was going to get DQ'd like Vettel was. No, not this again.
Yeah, both Williams also stopped at the end of the race. Now, there's this rule with the FIA where they have to take the leader sample from the car. But if you stop out on track, first of all, that's waving a red flag at the FIA to come check your fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And they factor in how much of the lap you may have missed by not bringing it back. Thankfully, both cars had enough fuel, but I know for a fact the FIA, you know, pulled those cars aside to make sure, okay, you're good.
I know people would have loved to see those positions reversed between Nicholas and George, but George even said himself, look, if it means sacrificing my race, make sure Nicholas is still up in the points.
He's a good boy.
That man's a good
teammate. That is enormous for their constructor battle as well, because that is a death knell for Alfa Romeo and the constructors.
Williams may have just put eighth on lock.
I was going to say, they didn't just overtake Haas. They overtook Alfa Romeo with that 10-point haul, as it stands. So, we'll have to wait and see if that holds up. But for now, it puts them 8th in the constructor, which is a huge result for them. Should we talk about the incident that first started all this carnage? Welcome to this week's episode of Steward Watch. And let's just say, gentlemen, you know it's not a good sign when Lucas Degrassi takes to Twitter and says, you know, I think Valtteri Bottas missed his breaking point. Because that is a man who would know.
That's a throwback. Valtteri got an awful start. Got jumped by both Red Bulls and Norris on a slightly damp track. And just said, fuck them kids, into that braking zone.
Yeah, drove straight into the rear of Lando Norris, destroyed his car after during the red flag. They couldn't fix the damage in time. Norris's car was then a battering ram, essentially, for Verstappen and Perez. Stroll had his own separate incident where he...
Yeah, Stroll had his own incident where he cloned what Bottas did and proceeded to mount, this is NSFW content, mount Charles Leclerc's Ferrari.
You know, maybe that's why Jack Villeneuve has done a complete 180 on Lance Stroll and now thinks he's going to get the Mercedes seat.
Yeah, and I, anytime anyone hits the apex from the other side of the track, it's not good.
This was...
No.
Look, I am typically a defender of Lance Stroll in most discussions. That was cartoonish.
That was really bad from Lance Stroll.
That
was cartoonish. And he didn't ingratiate himself with the way that he seemed very sheepish in his response. I know you can't really judge like shit and like remorse and shit like that from just like, but it seemed like, you know, when Valtteri Bottas went and apologized to everybody, because boy did he owe a lot of people with apologies. He seemed a lot more forthcoming and apologetic about it in public than Lance did.
In all fairness, Bottas completely owned it. He kind of had no choice in the matter given how blatant he was.
For the most part, Lance was pretty much in Bottas' shadow for, like, how many cars he took out.
Oh, you only took out, like, one and triggered another one to go out, because it also caught Ricardo's car.
Caught Ricardo on the side,
Which, man, the video clip of Ricardo slamming his head on his halo kind of says it all about how his season is going. Hopefully things turn around soon for him. Lance got a 5-place grid penalty for Spa. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's enough. Bottas got a 5-place grid penalty for Spa. I don't think it's enough.
I was going to ask, do you guys think 5 places on the grid for Spa is a fair punishment? Because that was a nasty, nasty pair of incidents.
I believe JB in our Discord server put it best.
What's up, JB?
If it wasn't not Jensen Button, we wish.
We wish.
The homie who also had something to say after the race to the effect of, look at all those mercs taking out their competitors. JB in our server said if it wasn't wet, that would have looked suspicious from Bottas. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. I was going to say, the wetness of the track was probably the only mitigating factor you would use to maybe lessen the punishment there. And I think that's probably the reason they both only got 5 places. Because if it were me, I'd be thinking 10, quite frankly. I think 10 would have been fairer in this context. Like something that's actually going to... Like, Lance Stroll would effectively start Spa from the back if he gets 10 places. Bottas, that's going to be out of main contention for the win if it's 10 places. So I was thinking 10, but I can understand why the stewards went 5, given it was a wet track. It was awful.
There were a pair of incidents... Not befitting Formula One drivers.
Bottas missed his braking spot by 15 meters. Easy. Like, come on! And this is coming from a guy I want to defend Valtteri, because I don't think he's having quite as bad a time of it as some people are making out, but dude!
He's taking your reasons to defend him away.
He's making it very hard for him.
Tell you what, though. One of two things happened in Mercedes. He either signed his resignation or he's getting a huge raise for next year.
I joked about this on Twitter. It's like, have you ever seen the Top Gear Winter Olympics where Hammond in voiceover, like during the ice hockey game, where he goes, I accidentally but very accurately took out James. But that's kind of what that incident felt like. Because it was like, inadvertently, Bottas had taken both Red Bulls out of contention for the win and basically got Hamilton a fat dub in the championship battle because he's plus 16 as it stands right now on the charts of the championships. So, well done, Valtteri, I guess. Question mark?
When I said that Silverstone was Mercedes' last stand, I didn't say that thinking that, oh, Mercedes is going to blow a Red Bull off two races in a row.
Now Christian Horner might have a genuine reason to be mad as hell. Because apparently Toto walked over to Christian to apologize, and apparently according to the grand old report of, checking my notes here, Nico Rosberg, professional shit stirrer.
good color commentator.
Fantastic on commentary this weekend.
Great on the mic, but professional shit stirrer. I was like, Horner was having apparently none of it. And to be fair, I can't really blame him on that one. But more on him briefly in a minute. But it also led to a different sort of conversation, gentlemen. I'm going to go to you, King, on this one. This is interesting. Because a lot of teams brought up, the cost cap for the teams this season. Obviously, the millions and millions of euros of crash damage that has obviously taken place over the course of the last two weekends, especially for your Red Bull. That insurance call is not going to be a fun one. But they're saying, should teams be charged out of their cost cap if they've been deemed at fault for an incident? Because a lot of people have mentioned the cost cap, a lot of people have mentioned these were big old repair bills, and I have an opinion on this, but I want to know what you're thinking, because I know you're a bit more in-depth of the rules than I am.
I think it's, kind of stepping back for a moment, most of us in this call are familiar with the National Basketball Association,
right,
and how cap space works in the NBA. Oh, yeah.
Congratulations on getting Kemba Walker, by the way. Happy for the King.
I'm glad Kemba's
enjoy those out. Knees. We didn't.
But yes, in terms of there is an allowance in the financial regulations specifically for crash damage. I forget what the set amount is, but I think it's like at least $1 million.
Right.
And when you talk about the cap space the teams have in terms of the cost cap and potentially losing that to not only your own crash damage, but whoever else is involved. And if you get into that set of thinking, who are the people who are going to decide who's at fault in these incidents?
Right.
And you go into a wide gray area, and then you also think about who determines what is fair market value for the items damaged in an incident. When it's your own accident, you know what the cost is because you have to pay for it. When it's someone else's accident, the other teams have no reason to do things as cost-effectively as possible. They're going to do whatever they can to make sure that you feel the financial pressure.
So, should I start applying to become the official FIA insurance adjuster for the Formula One World Championship?
That's just it. It's functionally, what they're talking about is car insurance and who's at fault in a crash. Mattia Binotto, who has to deal with a written-off Ferrari power unit as a result of that Stroll collision and mounting.
Expensive.
And ditto with Perez's power unit as well. Mm. That's going to be the difficult thing, is kind of judging who's at fault, who's supposed to pay what amount, and who's going to decide that. Because if it's, the teams will just argue all damn day over what their car is worth and what other people's cars are worth. If you have the FIA doing it, then you're going to get people screaming from the rooftops about bias and the usual.
But the thing is, that there's already a financial, there's already a jury that determines if a team has.
People will still claim bias. It might not be.
But that jury still exists right now and currently are officiating the F1 financial regulations. They just don't do anything involving the crash damage because it's not on them. The teams have a set allowance.
It's an interesting new element to this cost cap era, and something that frankly, haven't had to deal with in unlimited budget motorsport before.
Yeah,
we don't have many other budget capped sports out there.
Not really.
No hard caps, really.
Especially in Europe, where most of the championship is based. Like we have a little bit of that in certain leagues in soccer, but if anyone will tell you about football and financial fair play, we all know it's a can of worms that's probably not worth getting into on this podcast because it is a mess.
Yeah, there's a big difference between a luxury cap, soft cap, and then if you go over this, you are out of our championship, goodbye. And that's kind of how Formula One is structured going forward into this cost cap era.
Yeah, because that's one of the aspects of it that took a lot of the teams back. When they were like, when they kind of publicly stated, what's the penalty going to be for going over the cost cap? And Ross Brawn responded saying, it's disqualification from the championship.
and frankly, that's how it needs to be officiated because teams like Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari will spend into a theoretical luxury tax all day if it means winning.
Yeah.
Or in Ferrari's case, being happy to finish third.
Yay! But that's the whole point.
Carlos Sainz having a damn good season.
Yeah,
exactly one good second driver in the Formula One paddock this year.
Beautiful.
Exactly one!
I was going to say, I think this firmly comes under the bracket of it's motorsport, shit happens, get over it. I can understand why team principals might make that point, because they've got to look after more pennies than they've used to in motorsport up until now. Especially given that, certain teams will feel a little bit hard done by, given what's happened to them. And especially if you're Red Bull, again, because last 2 weekends have been expensive, I reckon.
Though, personally...
They've effectively had two and a half cars written off.
I think the rules, the financial regulations are fine as they stand. Like, the teams have a generous crash allowance before it actually starts eating into the actual cap space. So, I think it's a lot smaller than Ferrari's making it out to be.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing that I think is lost in translation here. And obviously it's, the team bosses politicking because they're politicians and that's what they do. No one so far, even having written off multiple cars as Red Bull has in the last 2 weekends, they're not out of their crash allowance yet. And it's going to take a couple more completely written off Formula One cars to do so.
Yeah, but let's say in this grand hypothetical that Mercedes had to cover everyone's bill after what Bottas did. That would mean their allowance is immediately gone, while every other team had to pay $0. And yeah, now they're eating into the cap space. You wouldn't be able to run it
You wouldn't be, because that's not fair to Mercedes. You'd need to fundamentally rewrite the cost cap to have such a rule in place.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think it's a lot of talk, and purely talk, for what is fundamentally just dipping into a crash allowance you've come nowhere close to exceeding so far.
One more point I wanted to go into from the live chat, because JB made an interesting point on YouTube. He said, quote, "For me, the grid penalties from engine changes as a result of crash damage is a bigger issue than the cost cap."
And that I can agree with. For Verstappen, his impact at Silverstone, they reused that engine, and for first practice session, car was fine. Second practice session, Max was complaining that the car felt broken and he was suffering from terminal understeer. They threw some setup changes at it. It never really got any better. After qualifying, Red Bull had found that one of the engine mounts had cracked and was worsening across the weekend.
And that is a hell of an effort to try and get that thing to work to begin with.
They are trying to repair it externally by welding that engine mount effectively back together.
Go on,
King.
Yeah, the fact that, now that the financial regulations are a thing, maybe the FIA could think about phasing out grid penalties and just making going over your allotment a financial penalty.
Yeah, take $2 million off the cap. That's
not $2 million. That's way too much. But
if we dug, because it's very important that the power units are not part of the cost cap, because those suckers are about $10 million. U.S. dollars a pop. Those things ain't cheap.
Yeah, but I would say that it would be say, like, a staggered penalty for each engine you go over the allotment. So, like, you can, like, going, say, one component over isn't a huge penalty. But once you go, like, if you're going, like, three, like, you're using double
the allotment. If you're clearly gaming, if you're gaming the system to effectively just get more components in the pool, that's, you know, yeah. You have to stagger the penalty.
Did we not try, like, staggered grid penalties depending on certain bits of the... Don't we already have that already?
Or we already have that, but because the grid isn't big enough, like, they stack depending on what you replace, and typically because you replace just a wholesale power unit, you just automatically get dropped to the back of the grid.
Now, yeah, I miss the days where people will go into, like, semi-fake histrionics about 100 place grid penalties.
Yeah.
When you know they're just starting at the back of the grid anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, it kind of, like, that was a big hole in the system, where it's like, hey, if we're going to replace one component, why not just replace them all?
Right.
Yeah.
If anyone's ever played the F1 games from Codemasters on a games console and realized that, oh, I'm starting from the back anyway, I might as well just take an entire new power unit allocation and add it on.
Eight of them in that allocation.
Yeah. Just bung them all
on. So, like, shifting it to being financial means that, like, no one has to take any grid penalties anymore, but the teams do have to pay for it out of their pocket.
That would be interesting. Yeah. I would actually like to see that more. You know, that's actually quite a nice alternative way of thinking. Speaking of alternative ways of thinking,
oh no, here we go.
We have to go back a little bit here because there was some aftermath. Yes, yet more aftermath from Silverstone and the Red Bull and Mercedes collision heard around the world because Red Bull tried really, really hard to get a bigger penalty to slap towards Lewis Hamilton than the 10 seconds he actually got. RJ, tell us a little bit more about that.
Red Bull had their appeal on the Silverstone crash, heard on Thursday, and it was rejected. Red Bull used a presentation to state their case. Now, y'all remember after Canada 2019, when Ferrari used as a key focal point of their appeal some bootleg footage of Karim Chandhok on the Skypad.
That's still so funny.
Well, the spirit is there, but Red Bull upped the production value. They used reserve driver Alex Albon on a filming day. It took a whole ass filming day to replicate the lines Hamilton took during the incident. Some of the accusations made by Red Bull made in their letter were so strong that Mercedes took to social media and claimed that Red Bull senior management, quote, attempted to tarnish the good name and sporting integrity of Lewis Hamilton. So, folks, how would you assess how Red Bull approached the incident?
Number one, let's go back. That is, trying to sim out possible outcomes of this incident is like big Lauda Air Flight 004 energy.
Wow, that is
this
a
week
reference.
On air
Holy
crash.
Fuck.
This week on air crash investigation.
what I like as well, they used the 2019 Red Bull the RB15 to on the filming day because he can't use a current car. And they could not replicate Hamilton's speed through the corner because it's a 2-year-old car, thus rendering it all moot in the first place because the whole thing that triggered the incident was Hamilton going in at too shallow an angle, too fast, and not being able to hold his line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all moot. That's all worthless evidence.
Yeah.
And
funny, though.
Oh, fucking comedy. Red Bull did this because they could.
Yep.
Because fundamentally, we got nothing to lose. The worst thing they can say is what the FIA did say, which is, well, it's the fuck off. And what brought it a bit far, and what called for some people to trigger the bringing the sport into disrepute catch-all, they didn't.
Love that
thankfully.
Phrase.
Was them not only accusing... Let's call a spade, accusing Lewis of doing it deliberately, but then accusing the FIA of being biased in the way they officiated the incident.
Though, admittedly, if if Red Bull so strongly feel that whatever they accused Lewis of, that the FIA literally told them, no, you can't say this. If they feel that strongly about it, they can just publicly release the letter. Obviously, out of respect to Red Bull, Mercedes and the FIA have not.
Yeah, that's very charitable for that.
But Mercedes, made it a point to address the claims in a statement. And they were incensed in that statement.
Yeah.
It was an angry statement. I have never seen Mercedes on all the years since their new era and on social media come out of a sentence as strong as, quote, attempted to tarnish the good name and sporting integrity
Nothing
of Lewis Hamilton.
Remember one. I remember the statement they put out in the aftermath of Abu Dhabi 2016 when Mercedes, the team, got abuse far and wide from very angry Lewis Hamilton supporters on every form of social media. That is the last time I can remember Mercedes as a team putting out a statement defending their people that strongly.
Yeah,
it was like and that is with the team being accused of sabotaging one of their drivers to show how serious they took this.
Yeah, it was, and look, I had a feeling Merckx would go to social media because that was a
out of all of this, Red Bull were the victims.
Yeah,
and they come out of this looking like total jackasses.
Yeah, yeah. Christian Horner had his ass held in the fire to answer for this
big time. Big time. Like, Christian Horner was accused from anything on a sliding scale of being a sore loser all the way up to inciting racial hatred, which did not help when Red Bull had to sack somebody on their team this weekend for racist text messages. I was like, it was
slinging so many N-bombs, Kyle Larson would have been proud.
Yeah, like, it was ugly.
It was atrocious.
It was atrocious, and Red Bull had a PR disaster on their hands because then Horner incited whataboutery regarding the abuse that Verstappen had got over that course of the weekend. So people on Twitter were going to pour gasoline on that fire, and Horner absolutely did not help himself in the middle of Hungary's weekend. It was
he turned to the whole of the Formula One community and said, "Flame me." And boy, did they, and he deserved every word of it. Yeah, Max got abuse on social media. Sure. Not racist.
Yeah.
Not what Lewis got. Not the fucking time to trigger some whataboutism. Not the fucking time, Christian.
No. That was a fight you were never going to win by coming out and saying that. Like, that was... No, and we're not saying that threats or death threats are okay either. Of course we're not. But
of course we're not saying
but
that.
There's but there's levels to this, and when someone got clear as day racial abuse all over social media, and people are blaming you, rightly or wrongly, I think wrongly, because they don't need an excuse. Racist assholes on the internet don't need an excuse. Yep. When people
agreed.
Are... When people are abusing someone on social media and you come out with whataboutism, what the fuck are you doing? You're a team boss. You're supposed to be a professional in this industry. You know better.
Yeah, like, for a man that's been in this sport for so long, he should know better. They handled that horribly. And then all the other shit that came out that same day, before we got into the nitty-gritty of the weekend regarding the racist text and Helmut Marko's, at best, clumsy comments about Yuki Tsunoda. It was a horrendous weekend for Red Bull Racing as a team.
How wild is it that Max Verstappen comes off as the most level-headed dude for
Max came into the social media
for popping off his top and saying, "I don't want to fucking deal with this shit anymore." How wild is that?
Let's take a step back. Let's address that. Two whiny, petulant, entitled racing drivers, as racing drivers always are the two most level-headed and mature individuals in this whole situation.
How? How did we get to this point? like, oh, God. It's It was, and don't get me wrong, Max's social media management did not help matters 2 weeks ago either, but at least he's done his best over the course of the weekend to say that this shit is not okay. Like, and he the whole three, the top three from qualifying on Saturday, addressed the booze and said this needs to stop.
Not just the booze, in the social media, in the press conference room after, the F1 media start drilling them with questions about it. Max just puts his foot down, said, "I don't want to answer any more fucking questions about this."
Yeah,
Lewis nods his head. Yeah, shut down the whole room.
Max is so dignified, and for once, this is not a totally ironic statement.
Yeah. Right.
I will say this, though. I will back up my words that I said after Saturday qualifying. If you boo a driver, that should be carte blanche for them to cut a heel promo on you. You know what I mean? They should just go full match.
Lewis might as well have cut a heel promo saying, well, the booing just fuels me.
To be fair, every athlete says that. It's nothing special in the grand scheme of things, but,
But it is funny.
It is funny. Look, that was a race that almost any other day Hamilton wins comfortably. So, I was still shitting myself on the final lap of that race, seeing the gap come down between Hamilton and Vettel's car for second on the road. It was less than a second by the time they got to the line. I was thinking, if that race was two laps longer, Hamilton probably wins that race.
Deploy the sewage air, Sebastian.
Red Bull, you've got a whole summer break. Have some words internally. Like, seriously. Like, because...
Log off!
Like, reposting the same dog image from 2017 is not going to help anybody.
But read the room.
Yeah. Like,
It's a great script from Tommy Wiseau, by the way.
And on that note,
let's put a bow on this. We're going into a whole summer break of Formula One. We're gonna have more racing. Red Bull's caught the car. There's 8 points between them. I would love to see this go down the wire. Don't have one of y'all screw this up. You got a good championship battle and prospect over the next 12 races.
The best one since 2012, easily. It's easy to lose sight of all the toxicity amongst this platform that we are in the middle of the best title fight in a decade.
We're spoiled. Like,
we are absolutely fucking spoiled.
Fun fact, before Vettel's disqualification, they were on the exact... Those two at the top of this championship... We're on the exact same points totals as Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton in 2016 after the Hungarian Grand Prix.
That's ridiculous. I never knew that. That's insane.
That's insane considering that we now give out points for fastest lap and we have...
Right? Yeah.
And we have like
football now.
We have even more potential variants for different point totals, and they still ended up with the same amount before Vettel.
I cannot wait for the championship to be decided by a fastest lap time trial.
Love it.
Don't you put that evil on me, O'Connell! Don't you put that on us!
Full Formula E season 2.
No. Watch this championship be decided by sprint qualifying.
Oh, God! We're ending the show. We're getting out of here.
I'm done.
Yeah, MotoGP is back this weekend in Austria. Look, I know we're all a little bit tired of motorsport at the moment, but Austria has genuinely gone down as one of the better races on the MotoGP calendar.
Ducati, we're going to talk about motorcycles. It's finally going to be Pecco's weekend.
Maybe, we'll see. Who had Miguel Oliveira winning his first Grand Prix last year? I mean, with the pass of the year. So, MotoGP in Austria back this weekend. King, am I right? Is it Tempelhof this weekend or next weekend?
It is next weekend.
Next weekend. Okay. Thanks for reminding me.
This weekend, we're racing over a freaking bridge in Nashville.
Yes, and IndyCar is back at Nashville this weekend. As James Hinchcliffe quite wonderfully said, we're racing over a freaking bridge. What more needs to be said? Motorsport, everybody. It's a fun time. So we'll be talking all about that on next week's show. But until then, basically, you can find us We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. Subscribe if you enjoyed the show. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter, a motorsport_101, at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at Cam Buckley has disappeared off the damn screen. I'm not sure they have usernames that long, but apparently it's CBuckley917, although it might be a burner account by the time he gets back from his hiatus. We're also on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. You can follow us on there as well. Also, I want to say publicly, because I was not on last week's show, massive thanks to Stuart for coming on last week's show. Very, very grateful for that. He does not need any help or plugs from me regarding social media or anything along those lines, but I did want to publicly say thank you that my fellow West London brother was able to fill in on my absence. So thanks, Stuart. Much appreciated, man. I want to say that publicly. Patreon.com/motorsport1. $5 gets you early access to all of our backlog and all the audio episodes. $10 for the video version. And the supporters club of our Discord because these shows live as they're being recorded. Thanks to the YouTube chat as well, Vic, JB and Jason for contributing as well. As Cam's being mauled by his dog, we'll get out of here. I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Ryan Eric King and RJ O'Connell. Cam Buckley, kinda, sorta here. He might come back for the, he's just come back. This is we're about to sign off. Cam, have you recovered? We get to talk bikes next week. It's gonna be fun, I promise.
I wanna go home.
We're going home, I promise. We'll talk bikes next week. We'll cheer you up, I promise, okay? Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been Ryan Eric King, RJ O'Connell, and Cameron Buckley. Until next week, thanks for watching and listening. And sayonara.
Later, y'all!
Bye.
Team has still got another win!
Yeah! No!
Well, Lord. Also, man, Dre, don't listen to the outro last week's episode.
I may address this in the intro of next week's show. Whatever it is, you've been warned.